Okay, here we are, our first ever semi-pro series, Beyond Traditional Recognition. With me today I have...
Oh, that's my cue. Vitol Tietze, the script editor of BTR and general all-round absolute genius and bright guy.
An opinion held only by Vitol.
Too true.
Well, some of us also hold it, but there you go. Vitol, where did the idea for Beyond Traditional Recognition come from?
Well, initially, and this was probably a good couple of years ago, actually, we were going through with the Doctor Who's. We were still doing our first season, of course. There was rumblings of possibly a little Blake 7 spin-off thingy, which is, of course, hopefully, eventually still going to turn up at some point.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yes. Well, scripts are coming along, etc., etc. But I remember that you said... Okay, this is all good and fine, it's fun, we're going to keep going with the Doctor Who, definitely, and so on and so forth, but we want to do something original, something that we've created ourselves, not only for the monetary compensation, i.e. we can actually sell some of it, but also because it gives us a chance to be able to come up with something right from the get-go and run with it in whatever direction we want. There's no preconceived notions, it's totally ours. Now, I had... a series idea at the time, sort of running on the back burner, which was called The Alien Factor, which may yet turn up one day in some form or another, which you said sounded like it might possibly work, might be a good idea. I had quite a few storylines set out, a couple of scripts, you know, already had some of the work laid down for us. And we ran with this for a little bit, but while I was developing it, I started to realize that it was perhaps a bit too visual to work effectively as an audio series. So I decided maybe we'll scrap that, possibly come up with something else, which I thought about for quite some time. In the end, I thought, well, I'll come up with something eventually, but for the time being, because time is pressing, we all want to get on with recording something, I'll just do a science fiction anthology series. And, you know, sounds like a good idea. It's a pretty easy idea to come up with. Most of the work's done for you. All you have to say is, these are the basic ground rules, and that's about it. I actually had an idea at one point, not 100% sure where it came from, to do an anthology series with exactly the same cast every episode, most likely playing different characters. Would have been a great casting move, because we wouldn't have to find different guest cast every month or week or however often it is. But for whatever reason, we didn't go with that, and I suppose it just seemed a bit simpler on a scripting level to run with various numbers of characters each played, depending on what's required.
Hmm. Now, being that it's a sci-fi anthology series, there are obviously many different directions that one can take such a series. Hmm. I mean, now, from being that you're sort of working on the whole the creative side of it, i.e. the scripting, that generally... is where the majority of your sort of the feel for the series will come from. Obviously, your post-production mm-hmm. does play a rather large part of it, but your initial feel
and
comes...
And you better do a good job.
I'm working on it, slowly but surely. But what is the overall, like, the feel of the series going to be like? I mean, how do you envisage Beyond feeling like?
Well, it's an odd one, really. I mean... As I've noted in the format document that goes out to writers, even starting with the title, Beyond Traditional Recognition, gives you an idea that this is going to be something that goes beyond traditional recognition, aside from me trying to come up with as many BTR acronyms as possible, which, of course, is where Behind the Radio comes from as well. And I was thinking, okay, let's have something a little bit... different, maybe a little bit weird, but that also has familiar traditional elements in it. So it's a bit of the old, a bit of the new, a bit of the avant-garde, a bit of the traditional. A lot of the idea came from a few storylines that I'd sort of knocked together over the months, which I thought might make a bit of a sound basis for some of the plays. And there were a few of them which seemed to have a certain thematic link of, you've got sort of an old traditional sci-fi element, maybe something out of H.G. Wells or something out of the 50s B-movies, say, Alien Invasion or one of your Reds Under the Bed analogies sort of things. And you infuse into that a newer idea, maybe something from more avant-garde science fiction or hard science fiction. So it's a blending of subgenres in that way. And hopefully the fusion creates something with elements that are familiar to most, but which also has some sort of angle which is new and unique to it.
Now, okay, you say that we've got such a... I mean, it's wonderful that we've got this series which is so broad. I mean, that's when I speak to people on, like, ICQ and in various chat rooms. When I'm talking about Beyond Traditional Recognition, generally the question that I'm asked is, well, what's the series about? And the best I can tell them is it's some sort of anthology series similar in vein to, like, The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits, which unfortunately isn't the world's most accurate parallel to draw, because we are trying to do something somewhat different. Mm. But do you feel, with this sort of the broadness of what we're doing with the series, that it could possibly be too broad to appeal to people? That, I mean, like, this is one of the things that's been levelled at BBV, is that their series is so broad, i.e. it can go anywhere and possibly everywhere, and they invariably do, which is wonderful for the writers and the production team, because it makes it so different to work on with each new CD release.
But it's hard to know which play will appeal to you as an audience member.
Exactly, because you've got to go by is the cover on the website and a bit of a blurb and a little trailer or a behind-the-scenes featurette. So, I mean, do you feel that it's a good thing to make it as well? Like, it is from the writer's perspective, and certainly from my perspective with post-production, it makes it a heck of a lot more fun. But from a consumer's point of view, do you think we've stretched ourselves a bit too far, or that it will pay off in the end?
Well, normally what I say to writers, because it's a tough thing to encapsulate, it's one of those things that you've got it in your mind, you've got it in your gut, you feel that you know exactly what it is, you feel it. But to actually convey it, as you've said yourself, is a little difficult. Normally I say, well, go read the format document. But
which we're not including with every CD release for obvious reasons.
But I feel that unlike the BBV plays, which sort of focus on a different approach or a different subgenre with each play, with this fusion that hopefully is going to be reflected in the plays, and certainly from the scripts that I've seen, it has been to quite a good degree. It has little elements for everyone, but at the same time, as much as possible, all of those elements are in each play, not crowbarred in, preferably if possible, but there's a bit of the old, a bit of the new, a bit of the wacky, a bit of the traditional, that sort of thing, so that you have this broad-based appeal, but there is a consistency from play to play. Each time, even though the theme and the tone is sort of comes from many different elements, many different areas, it's pretty much the same every single play. So hopefully, even though there is that broad-based appeal, people will notice that there is a consistency from play to play, and that it's a bit easier to spot, well, you know, this is the sort of thing that appeals to me, and it's likely that if this one appeals to me, all the others will as well.
Okay, now, you say that they're broad and they will appeal to everyone. From a consumer's perspective, it must be incredibly difficult to decide purely based on a piece of cover art and a 90-second trailer, which really, from our point of view, makes absolute 100% sense, because we know what the actual story's about. We know exactly where they're taken from in the play. But if you're just totally fresh coming into it, going by what we've just got on the website is, I think, very hard. And I'm loath to send copies off for review to magazines just at the moment, only because if we were to receive a negative review of any sort of sort,
it could damn us completely.
It would damn us completely, before shooting the horse before it's even managed to start the race. Now, looking at our stories at the moment, could you give us a sort of a brief 30-second... Tracy of what happens in each of the stories.
Fair enough. I think the go here would be to be a bit less oblique than the trailers are, than the blurbs are, because although they're sort of they encapsulate some of it, they're more sort of aimed at style and enticing with mystery and that sort of thing. So I'm gonna hit you with a few basic plot details. The opening, we've got six plays altogether. The opening disc is a double length, and I think the idea is that if the whole lot ever went out as half-hour episodes, that would go out as two. Basically, the idea behind that is that you've got a couple of gents who are working for a firm called Ionix, and they're more in the scientific bioengineering field, that sort of thing, and mechanical engineering, computer engineering, that sort of thing as well. And basically they're inventors. They've come across a few interesting ideas and they're trying to go with them. But one of them has a bit of a mystery to unravel. You see, he's woken up and he's discovered that somehow over 6 hours of his life have vanished while he's been asleep. He can't account for them. The home computer system, all the supporting evidence suggests that he simply wasn't there for those 6 hours. So he's got a mystery to unravel.
So in other words, he didn't exist for... it was a six-hour block rather than 6 hours sort of spread all over the
place.
That's
right. It was a six-hour block when he just wasn't there. In fact, his entire bedroom might as well have vanished.
Hmm.
From time and space altogether, possibly. Or possibly, it just didn't progress through those 6 hours. It just froze in time.
Time was put on ice, in other words.
Indeed, which is where the title comes from, ice. So he and his colleague are trying to investigate this matter. They discover that some of their theories parallel with a little of their work at the Ionics Corporation. And from this, they're able to proceed and come up with new angles on their invention, which hopefully will, you know, hit the nail on the head. That will be the final turning point that they need. Meanwhile, we have a mysterious woman who we don't know too much about, who seems to be orchestrating events from what we can tell. And how much do you think I should give away to our listeners, Matthew?
Well, I think that that's enough for ice, because any more and it will give away
the twist in the middle of the storyline.
Not the twist in the end, because there are two twists in the story, being that it's two-episode release. Okay, so moving on from ice, we have Volume 2, which is comprised of two stories. We have Shards of a Forgotten Tomorrow by one of our new writers, Darren Jordan.
Very good writer, very good writer.
And we also have The $6 Million Brain.
Yes, Darren's script, Shards of a Forgotten Tomorrow, more than anything else, I think the tone of it really captured my interest. The actual storyline I'm at odds to try to get to grips with. Perhaps as director of that title, Matthew, you might like to fill viewers in on the nitty-gritty.
Well, listeners, actually.
Listeners.
We've got to be precise about this.
I'm sorry, I'm such a television person.
Yes,
I am.
I know. Shards is an interesting one. It's our attempt at something. Having never watched Sapphire and Steel, I'm going to say that it's very much like Sapphire and Steel. It's a very modern-day play. And it focuses around this family, the Mallorys, and Mrs. Mallory has just given birth to a son. Now, this son isn't any normal son. He's actually an angel. Let's not beat about the bush. He's an angel. He's got wings and a halo and everything. And throughout the play, the play focuses on... There's no direct narrative sense. That's why I compare it to something like Sapphire and Steel, because it's not trying to follow your beginning, middle, and end. There is a narrator... using the term very loosely, a character called Rebecca, who comments on the activities of what happens in the play. She's almost omnipotent with regards to what happens, and she has this special connection to the angel child, which isn't revealed until the end as to what that link is. And so you follow what happens as how this angel baby affects the lives of those around them. Like, we look at Mr. Mallory, who ends up going to a shrink as a result of what's happened, because it totally screws his mind. We look at Mrs. Mallory, the way that it affects her having a son who is, for all intents and purposes, referred to as a mutant in the eyes of the general public. We've got the next-door neighbour who feels that this child is the vanguard of an alien invasion force. And the psychiatrist himself also plays a rather large part, because he helps to contextualise everything that's going on through indirectly linked with the character of Rebecca. So it's a rather interesting play. There's a very huge, shocking twist at the end of the story, which I won't tell you what it is. You can't tell what the twist is from the beginning, but you know there is going to be something.
I hate to say that that's one of the things I unabashedly stole from the likes of The Twilight Zone, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Roald Dahl short stories. Having that twist at the end, not always necessarily there, but certainly a bonus if you can have it, because in a way, sometimes if you've run through a play, you've listened to it, you think, yes, that was good, but I want that little something extra. It hits you with it there right at the end.
Exactly, and that's exactly what happens with Shards of Forgotten Tomorrow. I mean, we don't intend to do this, I think, with every play,
certainly $6 Million Brain doesn't have any sort of direct overt twist, as you might expect from a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
But it's certainly some sort of almost punch-in-the-gut element at the end, at least gives it a satisfactory and definite conclusion.
Which is what I think you need, especially when you're dealing with 30-minute standalone episodes. You can't afford to have it just tail off.
That's right.
Or have some sort of thing where the revolution comes full circle and they topple the what's the word I'm thinking of? The dominating person, the dictator.
Mm.
That's the one I'm for. And so they don't just topple them and then that's it. The Doctor goes off in the TARDIS at the end.
Yeah.
Whereas it's very much a case of your main protagonists, bang, something happens and it's like, oh, fuck, where did that come from?
Mm. Indeed, usually with a half-hour play, there's not necessarily enough time to have any sort of full-length epilogue. So sometimes you really do have to just hit it in a second and let it go.
And one thing we definitely have to point out at this is there will not be a single ending in this play which involves our protagonist standing on the microphone, cracking a bad joke and laughing as the theme music kicks in.
You know, I was just thinking of Kirk, Spock and McCoy as you were saying all of that, strangely enough.
Okay, so moving quickly along to
$6 Million Brain. To me, it was a bit of an experimental narrative style. I'd always wanted to do sort of a one-act play on one set, and I thought this is a good chance to do it. Most of it is a few characters sitting around a table in an auction house, and basically the plot concerns a few, shall we say, less than nice people sitting around waiting for a certain item to go on auction, which they are required to bid on and win in order to complete a nefarious plan of theirs. However, we discover throughout the course of the episode, in fact quite early on, that one of them is, I think, either an undercover police officer or an innocent brought into this as an undercover agent, and he is required to get enough evidence recorded so that they can nab the dastardly doers. And much of this concerns not only developing the characters, of course, as much of it is discussion, but also exactly how it is that he's going to be able to get the precise evidence that is needed in order to capture the crooks.
And this is one of our interesting ones, because it's very rare for us to do a play which, as you said, is set around a table with a group of people talking for 20 minutes.
That's right, where the emphasis really is on what the people are saying rather than any sort of fast-paced action plot progressing.
Exactly, which is very at odds with the rest of our output, which I think it pays off. Having recorded this particular episode, I do think it works very nicely. And if I was to ever adapt any of these for some sort of theatre production, that would be one of my starting points, because it is a very well-constructed character piece.
And I think it was very helpful that we got a truly superb cast to play every role. I count myself in that as I do play one of the characters, but only because I was able to work off the other talented cast so brilliantly. It was a perfect ensemble, I feel. A very lucky piece of casting that everyone was fantastic. I think in the first Behind the Radio, David mentioned his role as the auctioneer. And
yes,
I must say, top-notch performance from him. Absolutely top-notch.
So you'll have to, if any fans of David out there, and we know you're out there, if you enjoy his performance.
And he thanks you for the chocolates.
Yes, he does. Although he's never shared any of them with us. The evil man. So that's enough. Okay, and so finally we move along to the final two stories in our release. We have Dark Guardian by the wonderful chap Peter Graham, who, of course, you will remember from the BBV release Sontaran Silent Warrior, and also from our soon-to-be-forthcoming Doctor Who story Smokescreen.
That's the one right after Magical History Tour,
indeed,
of course.
Indeed it is.
And in fact, for anyone who's been listening to Magical History Tour and is interested in the overall story that's been going on with The Watcher, we have in fact Peter Graham to thank for that notion, and thought I'd give him due credit in case it doesn't turn up on the episodes, which of course it will. It was entirely his idea, and I thought it was interesting enough that we should run with it for the whole season. But back to Beyond Traditional Recognition, of course.
And after Dark Guardian, we have our favourite of the whole batch, being from another script from Darren Jordan. It's our out-and-out comedy story, The Natasha X Show. Now, before we get to Natasha X Show,
Which is an interesting breed, I must say.
It is indeed. Before we get to Natasha X Show, very briefly, Dark Guardian, although I'm directing this story, I for the life of me can't remember a single thing about it. I don't think there is a Dark Guardian of sorts in it. I'm sorry, Peter, I can't honestly remember anything about it.
I think I can help you out with a couple of minor details.
I know there's some archaeologists in there at some point.
There are some archaeologists. It's largely set, if I recall correctly, in Roman Britain.
Yeah, that's right.
And there are interesting goings-on with a possible alien life form that has arrived on Earth and its interactions with some of the Roman Britons, and I think some of the Roman centurions and such. Yeah. And this is paralleled with the story of, I suppose similar to the Big Finish release, Fires of Vulcan, paralleled with the story of archaeologists in modern times finding some of the remains of this alien life form and wondering exactly what's been going on here.
Yeah, well, that's more detail, and that all sounds true with regards to the script itself, but I do apologise for not being able to give a definite sort of plot outline for what happens.
Well, I think it's been a while since we both looked at it, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it was one of those ones where I think we got about 6 months ago, and because we've sort of gotten behind in our recording schedule, we just haven't got around, but we are recording it in the next month or two, so you'll be able to hear that early next year. But moving along now to, very quickly, to talk about our final story, is the Natasha X Show. Yeah,
that's
now,
right.
This is an interesting one. Can you tell us a bit about who Natasha X is and how she ended up getting an episode of her own?
Okay. Well, what we initially had was one of the storylines that Darren sent in to us when he first started considering writing for us was, and which is the one that we've gone with for season two of Doctor Who, which was called the Sahul Continuum. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
I think it's Sahul. The
something or other continuum.
S-A-H-U-L. Make of that what you will.
That's right. And one of the characters that featured in it was sort of an absurd comical version of Xena, as if Xena wasn't absurd and comical enough on her own.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. New Zealanders love the show because it shows off their TVs.
Do you mind? I'm a New Zealander. Oh, shouldn't have said that. Now everyone's going to hate me.
Oh, we'll give him some fish and chops after this and some biscuits.
Too kind. Well, as long as I can get sucks off him.
Oh, no, we didn't say a naughty word.
We should probably cut that out, in fact. But anyway,
we digress.
Natasha X turns up, I believe, in one of the episodes anyway, sort of largely as a jokey subplot to the story. But as it turned out, despite the fact that it was a jokey subplot and it sort of stopped the plot dead for a while, it was so damn entertaining that I wished she'd been in it in a more integral role.
Not just you. I thought the character was wonderful, and when you sort of suggested this concept, I said, well, go for it. If Darren's up for it, do it, because I said it was wonderful.
So I said to Darren, it's a shame that she's not in it with a little more substance, because she'd be great right through it. So he said, well, I tell you what, why don't we do a little 5-minute short adventure? If there's any room on the end of the CD, we can put it on there. And I thought,
that's right.
Sounds good. I think the script for that's still floating about a bit.
Yeah.
And then we thought, well, Beyond Traditional Recognition has emerged. Darren suggested, how about we do a full half-hour play starring Natasha X? And I thought, sounds great. Having one of her adventures sounds absolutely ideal. But he took it one step further. Instead of just having a half-hour Natasha X episode, as it were, he's basically done a spoof of This Is Your Life, focusing on the character of Natasha X as if she's a real person.
And it totally becomes so convoluted, but in a wonderful way. And
it's almost absurd on Python-esque levels, really.
It is. I mean, I keep expecting Grant Chapman to walk out and say that his name's Throat Wobbler Mangrove or something.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a wonderful script, and apparently there's been some new developments in the realm of Natasha X. Now, this is some breaking news for you. Nobody knows this apart from myself, Vitol, and Darren. And
it only happened this week, in fact.
Right. And that news is...
That news is that Darren's involved with some comic book people.
Called Eclectica Press.
That's right. And it seems that they are very, very interested in creating a Natasha X comic, which possibly may or may not tie in with the BTR Natasha X Adventures.
That's the intention that I got from Darren, was that this comic book would tie in. It's the same character of Natasha Rex. It's a comic book version of an adventure of hers, and it would help tie into the rest of Beyond Traditional Recognition. Mm. And also, to a lesser extent, well, like obviously for copyright purposes, the Doctor Who story, the S-A-H-U-L Continuum.
Mm. Which we, in BTR, like to call Doctor Who Season 2 Story 3, for ease of reference.
DWS 2 S3.
That's even worse.
Yeah, makes no sense whatsoever. Mm. But no, so that's wonderful, and that'll be happening early next year.
And the hope is, if possible, to possibly release the Doctor Who story, the Beyond Traditional Recognition play, and the comic book simultaneously, so that we literally bombard everyone
Natasha X shall rule the world.
Perhaps we should do a Natasha X film as well.
Yeah, and we'll release a t-shirt and a coffee mug with Natasha X pictures on the front of it. And Natasha X is going to be the next big thing.
We certainly hope so.
On that note,
she's entertaining enough.
Well, we don't know what she looks like yet, but we don't even know who's going to play her. But anyway.
Well, she's going to be in a comic book. She's going to look busty, not wear a lot, blonde hair.
Bloody hell.
Who are we going to cast?
I'm feeling as Randy as Sin.
Matthew, would you be interested? You've got to play the Doctor.
Yes. Let's not go there. No, let's not go there. Right, well, on that cheery note, Vitol, thank you very much for that. Hopefully this has helped to give you some idea of what Beyond Traditional Recognition as a series will be like.
Well, it's certainly given me some idea.
And me too. Thanks very much.